Norman Hogjaw Landers was standing behind the counter when Falcon and Dove stepped in through the door of the City Pig.
Gracious, Falcon, who's that fellow with you? He's as big as you are. I swear the two of you together could block out the sun.
Well, hey there, Hogjaw. This is my cousin Duff, fresh from Scotland. He just got off the train, so I hope you have a lot of food back in your kitchen because we're going to make a run of it.
Oh, I think we can handle it. We got a big joint of beef we've been cooking since before daylight. I tasted a bit of it a while back. It melted in my mouth.
Well, all right. We'll have roast beef, mashed potatoes, green beans, biscuits, and lots of gravy.
I'll get them started.
Falcon led Duff to a table in the corner at the extreme back of the room.
Now you sit there, and I'll sit here. Because we're in the corner of the room, we'll each have a wall to our back.
Is it your habit to always have a wall at your back?
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't be a bad thing for you to follow either.
But everyone in town seems to know you. You have a lot of friends.
I also have a lot of enemies. And even when you are with friends, you never know who might come up behind you. Bill Hickok told me that once. And if he had paid attention to his own advice, he might still be alive.
You knew Wild Bill Hickok?
I knew him.
I'm told that you're as well known as Hickok was, and that you're as good with a pistol.
Andrew tell you that, did he?
Aye, but he was only the first. I heard it from many others as well.
You're new to America and new to the West. You don't want to believe everything you hear. People in the West, I don't know, maybe it's because we tend to be a little isolated from the rest of the world, but people tend to exaggerate.
I've no way of knowing if all I've heard of you is true, but cousin, I have heard of you.
Then do me a favor, and believe only the good things you've heard.
Aye, that I can do.
After having supper, Falcon took Duff to the McAllister homestead. The house was filled with people, and they were all McAllisters, either by blood or name. Falcon's brothers, Jamie Ian Jr., Morgan, and Matthew, were there with their wives, along with his sisters, Jolene, Megan, and Kathleen, and their husbands. They were already in the house when Falcon and Duff arrived. Falcon introduced them all to Duff.
My word! I had no idea I had so many cousins in America. All of you, plus Andrew and Rosanna.
Jolene smiled at Duff.
What you see here are just a few of us. This house isn't big enough to hold all of us.
How many are there?
103. Tell us, Cousin Duff, how are Andrew and Rosanna doing? We see them so seldom now that they're famous in the New York theater.
They are doing well. When I left New York, they were the principal players in a play called The Highlander.
The Highlander? What an odd name for a play. What does it mean?
It refers to someone who lives in the Highlands. It is rather like calling an American who lives in the West a Westerner.
Duff answered many more questions, how he met Andrew and Rosanna, and about his family back in Scotland, though, as he explained, he was the only one left.
With my departure, there is not one McAllister left in all of Scotland, or if there be, their cousins so distant that they're not known by me.
What brought you to America?
Andrew and Rosanna invited him.
Falcon glanced toward Duff, cautioning him not to go any further with the answer. Falcon was aware of all the details of Duff's flight, first to New York and then from New York to Colorado. The rest of the family had brought food, and they had an enormous dinner that evening. Then, as the ladies cleaned up from the meal, the men gathered in the parlor for drinks and cigars.
The drink is fine, but I've never caught on to smoking.
Oh, it's a nasty habit anyway.
Jamie, Morgan, Matthew, it was more than mere invitation from Andrew and Rosanna that brought Duff to America.
I thought it might be. What was it?
I'm going to let Duff answer.
I've killed a few men.
Haven't we all?
What do you mean by a few?
5. Well, more if you count those I killed in war. But 5 that I killed were my own countrymen.
I take it they needed killing, or else you wouldn't be talking about it so easily.
One of the men I killed, the son of the sheriff, was trying to rape Skye, my fiancée. And because he was the son of the local sheriff, I decided to go to the sheriff to tell him my side of the story. Skye would not have it any other way but that she go with me, being as she was a witness. But on the road, we were met by the sheriff and three of his deputies. Before I could say a word to explain the situation and to tell them that I was voluntarily coming to the sheriff's office, they began shooting. They were shooting at me, but they killed Skye. I killed the two deputies.
Then I was right. Sons of bitches needed killing.
I was still in Scotland when I killed those men, but knew that the sheriff was never going to let it go to trial. And without Skye's testimony as to what happened, I would not have been able to prove that my killing was justified, even if it had gone to trial. I knew that I was going to have to leave the country, so I boarded ship that very night and worked my passage to America.
You said you'd killed five men. That's only three.
Aye, Morgan. There's more to the story. Once I arrived in America, the sheriff sent his other two sons and his remaining deputy after me, not to arrest me, but to kill me. They caught up with me in the back of the very theater where Andrew and Rosanna were appearing. I killed the sheriff's other two sons, but his deputy escaped.
If he's got any sense, he's on his way back to Scotland now. You've certainly shown that you can take care of yourself.
I wish I could believe that, but I know this fellow, Rab Malcolm. He is evil incarnate, but there is a thoroughness about him that, were he to apply it to more noble pursuits, would be admirable. There's no doubt in my mind but that he is still here, probably recruiting more men for his nefarious scheme.
So you think he's still here?
Aye. More than likely he's still in New York. That's why I left New York. I was afraid that if he tried again it might be dangerous for Andrew and Rosanna, and I've no wish to get them involved. Andrew suggested that I come here.
Which I think was a good idea.
What are you gonna do now?
I'm gonna find some way to make a living. I've already made $250 just since arriving here today.
You made $250 in one day? I'd say that's a good day's wages. How'd you come by it?
It was easy. I turned over to the sheriff someone for whom a reward had been posted.
Wait till you hear how it happened.
Falcon proceeded to tell the story of Duff borrowing a cane and using it to trip up a thief.
And here's the best part. You know who he borrowed the cane from?
No idea.
I'll give you a hint. The man he borrowed the cane from doesn't need it to walk.
You're talking about Toots Nelson, aren't you? He's always so prim and proper. I'd love to have seen his face.
Well, it was something to behold, all right. But the expression on Stripling's face when he went ass over elbows was even better.
Later, after everyone had left and gone home, Duff stood staring out of the window at the calm night.
Anything wrong?
No, there's nothing wrong. 'Twas thinking I was. What a wonderful family you have, Falcon McAllister.
You're thinking of Skye, ain't you?
Aye. And the family we would have had.
These people, my brothers and sisters, and my brothers and sisters-in-law, are your family too.
I much appreciate your sharing them with me.
It's not my doing, cousin. It's a fact of life. But I can understand you're thinking about Skye. We've all lost people we love, Duff. But we go on with life.
And I will as well, though I've no idea as to what my new life will be.
What'd you do in Scotland?
I had land. I raised cattle.
You're a cattle rancher. There's no need for you to have a new life. You'll have your old life. You'll just be having it in a new place.
I don't know how it is in America, but in Scotland, one needs land to be a rancher.
You can homestead?
Homestead? Aye. Andrew mentioned something about that, but I'm not sure what he was talking about.
It's an easy way of getting land. All you have to do is file on it, build on it, and live on it for 5 years.
That sounds good.
I'll tell you what, cousin. We'll go into town tomorrow and find the best place for you to go to file on some land.
American landowner. Imagine that.
When Duff and Falcon went into town the next day, the Scotsman was fascinated with how busy it was. The sign at the depot that gave the elevation of McAllister as 8,750 feet also gave the population as 956. But Duff believed there were at least that many people just moving about, walking up and down the planked sidewalks, crossing the crowded street, moving in and out of the stores, and riding on horseback or in wagons, surreys, and buggies. He commented on it.
That's because we're the only town for several miles around. Many of the people you see live out in the country on farms and ranches, or in some cases as prospectors and miners. They come into town about once a week, and when they do, it's a big occasion for them. This is Saturday. That's their day to come into town. Let's go in here.
The painted sign on the glass window in front of the building read, McAllister Monitor. It was the newspaper office, and inside was the smell of ink, fresh-cut paper, and oil to keep the press operating smoothly. A somewhat overweight man wearing a green visor was sitting at a desk, selecting type from the type boxes as he composed the story.
Falcon! How good to see you. I was just about to look you up.
Look me up for what?
I wanted to get your story about what happened at the depot yesterday when a through passenger tripped up George Stripling by throwing a cane at his feet. Was it really Toots Nelson's cane?
Yeah.
I wonder what made the man decide to use a cane in such a way.
Why ask me, when you can get it straight from the horse's mouth?
What do you mean?
Larry, this is my cousin from Scotland, Duff McAllister. Duff, this is Larry Fugit, editor of the McAllister Monitor. As good a newspaper as you will find between the Mississippi River and the Pacific Ocean.
'Tis a pleasure to make your acquaintance, Mr. Fugit.
Good to meet you as well. What do you mean, getting my story from the horse's mouth?
I just introduced you to the horse, so to speak.
What? It was you? You're the one who threw the stick at the thief?
Aye.
Well, then, I shall need the full story from you.
Oh, there's no story to tell. He snatched a lady's purse and commenced to run. I borrowed a gentleman's bat and hurled it at him with an unexpected degree of success.
Something tells me that the success of your maneuver wasn't all that unexpected.
Despite Duff's reticence, Fugit managed to get the story from him, though his reluctance to be self-aggrandizing made it necessary for Falcon to introduce a few comments here and there to add the necessary color. After the interview, Falcon called upon the newspaper editor for a favor.
Larry, suppose a fellow wanted to homestead some land. Where would be the best place to go?
What, you mean here in Colorado?
Colorado, yeah, that'd be fine. But it is necessary. We're looking for the most available as well as the best quality of land for raising livestock.
Oh, well, in that case, if you don't just have to be in Colorado, Wyoming would be the best place, I think.
Wyoming?
Yes, up there they're so eager to have settlers that when you homestead, the territory of Wyoming will make additional land available.
Where in Wyoming?
Oh, just about anywhere in Wyoming. You could practically throw a dart at the map and settle wherever the dart hits. But of course, you would want the land to be fertile and well-watered, so that does somewhat limit your possibilities.
What about Cheyenne?
Cheyenne? Yes, I think Cheyenne would be a good place to start.
Then what do you say, cousin, that we take a trip to Cheyenne in a couple of days?
I would not want to put you out, Henny. 'Tis not necessary that you come.
Oh, nonsense. You're still new to the country. I'm sure I can be of some assistance to you. Besides, I'd enjoy the trip.
Then your company would be most assuredly welcome.
It was Falcon's routine to drop in at the post office any time he was in town. And when they went there, they found that Duff had received a letter. From the post office, they went to the City Pig restaurant. And there, as they waited for their meal to be served, Duff read his letter.
Dear Cousin Duff, I hope this letter finds you, for I am writing to impart some information that I believe to be of great importance to you. Percy Fowler, whom you will remember as one of the stagehands, has betrayed a confidence. As a result, Fowler has lost his position with the theater. However, it is an act of closing the door after the horse has left the barn, for I have learned, upon good authority, that Fowler provided information to Deputy Sheriff Malcolm from Argyllshire County in Scotland. Malcolm has learned that you are in Colorado, and I am certain that he will be coming out there to find you. So please be on the lookout for him. The Highlander continues to run with naught but glorious accolades from the newspapers. The New York Tribune said of Rosanna, "Rosanna McAllister portrays Lady Margaret in the play The Highlander, and such a luminary is she that Mr. Edison's electric lights, by which the theater is illuminated, are scarcely needed. Miss McAllister brightens the stage by her mere appearance. I report this to you in all great pride of my twin sister's accomplishments, though I dare not say this to Rosanna, lest her head grow too large. With regards and affection from your American cousin, I remain yours faithfully, Andrew McAllister."
The New York newspapers speak well of Rosanna.
They always do. They praise Rosanna and Andrew alike, and I agree. I've seen them perform, and I think it's more than mere brotherly pride that makes me believe them to be players of great talent.
'Tis no mere brotherly pride, for I've seen them too, and they were very good.
What else did my brother have to say?
Duff hesitated for a second before he responded, because he did not want Falcon to think that he'd be asking for help in dealing with Deputy Malcolm. Then, he thought that to hold back anything Falcon's brother may have said would seem impolite. So he passed the letter across the table. Falcon read it quickly, then glanced up at Duff.
This man, Malcolm, would be the deputy who came for you in the theater?
Aye.
Then Andrew's right. We should be on the lookout for him.
I thank you kindly, Falcon, but this isn't your battle.
Duff, do you really think this deputy will come after you by himself?
I don't know.
He'll find as many men as he can.
But how will he be able to recruit so many? He knows no one in America.
He knows that you've come to join me. He'll use that as his means of recruiting. Believe me, Duff, he'll be able to round up an army just by collecting men who want to see me dead.
Oh, I didn't think of that. I left New York so as not to bring danger to Andrew and Rosanna. And here I've brought it to you instead. I'm sorry.
Oh, don't be sorry. I've been in danger before, and this just may be a good way of bringing my enemies out.
That night, Duff and Falcon sat on the front porch of the old McAllister homestead. It was on this porch that Kate Olmsted, Falcon's mother, had died. And now she and Falcon's father lay buried together, 25 yards away. The two men sat far into the night, exchanging stories. Falcon said that he could understand the killing rage Duff felt after Sky was killed. His own wife had been kidnapped and murdered, and Falcon went after and killed those who were responsible. He also told of his father and mother, how they had met when very young and run away together. He told how he was mentored by an old mountain man who was called simply Preacher. He also told of his own, as well as his father's adventures in the American Civil War. Duff spoke of his own father, Brigadier Duncan McAllister, a career soldier in India, where Duff had spent much of his childhood. Brigadier McAllister was at Lucknow, in command of 855 men, when it was besieged by over 8,000 rebels. He held them off until relieved by Major General Havelock. Though Duff had earned a commission, he had not made a career in the Army. He did serve in Egypt for a while, and he told Falcon his own experiences at the Battle of Tel El Kebir. He also told of his time at sea. In the dark vault of night, a golden meteor streaked across the sky.
That was Sky saying hello to me.
The meteor was Sky?
Every time Sky saw a meteor, she would say that it was the soul of some departed loved one saying hello. I laughed at her then, but find some comfort from it now. She spoke to me many times while I was at sea. I guess you think that's daft.
No, I don't. Not at all. The Indians have a much better connection to nature than the white man. And Indians believe strongly in such signs. I know better than to question them.
The two men sat in silence for several minutes. There was no need for them to talk any further. They had already shared with each other their past, or enough of what they thought was important anyway. They had taken the measure of each other and had found it acceptable and reassuring. Now they could sit confidently in each other's presence, content in their own musings and comfortable in the developing friendship that went beyond the remote familial connections. And yet, though the blood they shared to the original Falcon, great-great-great-great-grandfather to both, was small indeed, that seed of kinship was still there.
I wonder if he's looking down at us now.
I expect he is. I've thought many times about the fact that I have his name. I hope he's proud of that. I know he's looking down now and proud that two of his grandsons, though so far separated by distance and time, have come together.
Rab Malcolm and Clyde Shaw entered the Black Dog in Denver, Colorado. Even as the two men were taking their seats at an empty table, a drama was playing out before them. It had started before Malcolm and Shaw had even entered the saloon.
I don't want any trouble with you, Poe.
The speaker was a big man with wide shoulders, powerful arms, and big hands. His appearance was in direct contrast to the person he was addressing, a man he had called Pogue. Pogue was slender of build, with long hair, a thin face, and a badly misshapen nose. Well, the nose was more than misshapen. It was flat on his face and turned up at the bottom, with nostril openings so pronounced that they almost looked like a pig's snout.
Well, you got trouble with me, Gentry. You should have never butted in between me and my whore.
She ain't your whore, Pogue. She's anybody's whore, old pair. Hell, as ugly as you are, Pogue, you should already know that. Only way you'll ever get a woman to pay any attention to you is by paying them.
If I'm the one paying the whore, then that means she's my whore.
Yeah, that's the whole point. You ain't paid her nothing yet. That means she don't belong to you. If I want to talk to her, I can.
I suppose there's only one way me and you are going to settle this. We're going to have to fight it out.
Fight it out? Pogue, you don't want to fight me. You're so scrawny and weak, I'd near about break you in little pieces first time I hit you.
Oh, I ain't talking about that kind of fighting. I'm talking about making this here fight permanent. I'm going to give you the chance to draw against me.
Don't be a dumb fool. I ain't getting into a fight over a whore. Like I told you, I don't want no trouble.
And like I told you, you'd already got trouble. Now I'm telling you again to draw.
Go away, little man, before I come over here and break your neck.
Suddenly, Pogue pulled his pistol.
Ah!
A little mist of blood sprayed from Gentry's earlobe, and he dropped his glass and then slapped his right hand to his ear. Pogue dropped his pistol back into leather.
What the hell? Are you crazy? Draw!
Gentry made an awkward stab for his pistol.
Is there anyone here who didn't see him draw first?
Not a soul in that bar made a sound.
I want all of you to remember that.
It took about 3 minutes before a couple of Denver policemen arrived. Everyone admitted to seeing Gentry draw his gun first. And once the body was removed, the case was settled, and the pair of officers left.
Seems to me like this man Poe would be someone we might want to recruit.
Aye. See if he'll come talk to us.
Shaw got up from the table, walked over to speak to Poe, then brought him back.
Poe, this here's Deputy Sheriff Malcolm.
Deputy Sheriff? You didn't tell me nothing about him being a deputy sheriff. Look here, you got nothing on me. A policeman's already been here.
Oh, I'm not a local deputy. I've no jurisdiction here. Pogue. Is that your Christian name or your surname?
It's my bloody name.
I watched your, shall we call it, performance. You seem to be quite accomplished with a pistol.
I'm good enough.
Have you ever heard of a man named Falcon McAllister?
Yeah, I've heard of Falcon McAllister. What about it?
Do you think you're as good as he is?
I may be. What are you asking?
Mr. Malcolm has a bone to pick with McAllister.
Yeah, don't everyone.
In fact, my particular grievance is not with Falcon McAllister, but with his kinsman, Duff McAllister.
Duff McAllister? I've never heard of him.
It is my understanding that Duff and Falcon will be together. So I cannot hunt for one without hunting for the other.
Oh, you going after them, are you?
Aye.
Just the two of you?
And you. If we can come to some arrangement. I think three of us might be enough.
Malcolm, let me ask you something. Didn't you tell me it was three of you tried to take on Duff McAllister?
Aye.
And what happened?
He killed the other two. But that was an unusual circumstance. That's not likely to happen again.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that three of you wasn't enough to take on this here Duff feller? But you think three of us would be enough for Duff and Falcon? Mister, I ain't sure three is enough for Falcon alone, let alone if he has someone with him. And this here Duff feller you're talking about don't seem like he's going to be too easy his own self.
I thought you said you were as good as Falcon McAllister.
I said I might be. But you've brought up someone else, and that changes it a bit. You said something about coming to an arrangement with me. Does that mean financial?
Aye.
That's good. but I'm not intending to get myself killed by going up against Falcon McAllister and this other fellow you're talking about. You can't spend the money if you're dead. You're gonna need some more people.
I don't have enough money to pay for any more people.
Mister, there's lots of folks that want Falcon dead. The only thing is, there's none of them got the sand to go up against him alone. But if there's a bunch of us all gathered together, they wouldn't be scared, and more than likely we'd get the job done. And it wouldn't cost you nothing except what you're going to pay me.
The only problem is, Falcon is not the one I'm interested in.
That doesn't matter. If they're together, like you say, you ain't likely to get one of them without getting the other.
Do you think you could find such men?
Oh, I can find them. I know lots of people that would like to see Falcon McAllister dead. Hell, the problem ain't going to be finding them. It's going to be deciding which ones to take and which ones to leave.
All right. Round up the men.
We ain't talked about getting paid yet.
Suppose I pay you $25.
50.
25 now, and 25 when the job is done.
Give me the money.
Malcolm countered it out.
What's so funny?
I was going to say $10 till you come out with 25. Well, when you said that, I figured I could get maybe 50. You don't know it, mister, but you got took.
Well, you're just too smart for me. Now, if you would, please start rounding up some more men.
Will do.
You would have given more, wouldn't you?
Perhaps.
I mean, you gave me 100.
We'll keep that between ourselves, won't we?
Hell yeah. You think I want Pogue knowing I'm getting more money than he is?
I think he'd not be too pleased with that.
You Americans have tremendously large breakfasts.
Duff split open a biscuit and laid a piece of fried ham between the halves. His plate showed the residue of 3 eggs and home-fried potatoes.
Well, that may be so, but you seem to be up to the task.
I didn't say I didn't approve. I was just commenting.
I eat a big breakfast when I can, because I'm not always certain I'll get to eat again that day.
Seems reasonable enough to me.
Didn't you tell me that you bought a pistol?
Aye, that I did. I bought an Enfield Mark I.
Enfield, is it? Huh. I've heard of Enfield rifles, but I didn't know they made a pistol.
Quite a good one, actually.
Do you have a belt and holster set?
Oh, I do indeed.
I'll tell you what. After breakfast, suppose you strap on your pistol and we'll go outside for a little shooting.
I think that would be splendid.
When Duff stepped outside a short while later, he was wearing a pistol belt with bullets in every loop. The holster was in front, just over his right leg.
Why are you wearing your holster like that?
'Tis the way I wore it in the regiment.
No, you pull it around to your side.
Duff did as directed.
And let it hang low. Look at my gun. When my arm is hanging normally by my side, my hand is even with the pistol grip. See?
Duff made the necessary adjustments. Falcon began the task with some reservation because he feared that the job of teaching Duff to use a pistol might be more than he could handle. But he knew also that if Duff was going to survive his time in the West, he was going to have to be prepared for it.
Let's see what you can do.
Falcon pulled his pistol and pointed at a nearby tree.
See those 3 little limbs sticking up there? I'm going to shoot the one in the middle.
Half the twig flew away.
Now you try it.
The rest of the twig was blasted from the tree. Falcon squinted, then looked over at Duff.
Did you just miss your twig and hit that one by mistake?
No, I didn't miss at all. I thought that was the twig you wanted me to hit.
Can you hit one of the others?
Which one?
Oh, what the hell, your choice.
Both the other twigs flew away.
Damn. You'll do just fine.
I'm afraid I don't have the skills necessary to make a rapid extraction, though.
You mean a quick draw?
Aye.
Let me tell you something about quick draws. Half the people who can draw faster than you can't shoot. They depend upon their speed, then just blaze away, hoping they can hit what they're shooting at. Being able to hit your target is much more important than being able to get your pistol out first.
You said half the people. That means that the other half can draw faster than I can, and can also hit their target.
You might think that, but there's still another consideration. If you're going to draw on someone, you must be prepared to kill him. And you must be prepared to do so without the slightest hesitation.
I would imagine that one wouldn't draw upon another if he didn't want to kill him.
That's where you'd be wrong. It takes a lot of resolve to kill a man. Most will hesitate for just a second trying to fortify themselves to the task at hand. And that hesitation can be fatal. You've killed before in self-defense, yeah. But sometimes the question of self-defense might be a blurry line. Could you do it then?
When I was in Egypt, I killed men for no other reason than that they were wearing a uniform different from my own. As far as I know, they were good men. Family men. Husbands, fathers, sons, and brothers. But I didn't think about any of that. The only thing I thought of was my duty.
On the morning they were to leave for Cheyenne, Morgan McAllister arrived at the homestead driving a buckboard. Falcon tossed his saddle and saddlebags into the back of the buckboard, then tied Lightning, his big bronze stallion, onto the back. He had made arrangements to ship Lightning up to Cheyenne on the same train he and Duff would take. He hopped into the back.
Yeah. Duff, as you are my guest, you ride up front in the seat with Morgan. I'll just sit back here.
Are you sure? I'm as comfortable in either place.
I'm sure. Besides, this will give you and Morgan an opportunity to visit.
I appreciate the kind gesture.
Duff climbed into the buckboard and sat beside Morgan.
So how have you two gotten along?
Splendidly. I feel much closer than a fifth cousin.
Fifth cousin? Is that what we are? Fifth cousins?
Aye. Our nearest relative is five generations ago.
Would that be once removed or something?
It is admittedly quite distant.
Rab Malcolm was a structured man who did not like to be in any situation that wasn't well thought out in advance. He had tried to tell the Summerald brothers that going to the theater after Duff McAllister without a plan was not a good idea. But even though Sheriff Summerald had told his sons that Malcolm would be in charge of the expedition, the Summerald brothers had insisted upon having their own way. As a result of that insistence, their hasty actions had gotten them both killed. After agreeing to be part of Malcolm's entourage, Pogue found six more men who were willing to join in pursuit of the McAllisters. Their motivation was to find and kill Falcon McAllister. But as Falcon and Duff would probably be together, Malcolm had no problem with the arrangement. Being the kind of man he was, Malcolm found out as much as he could about each of the men who had joined him. Clyde Shaw had been his first recruit and had come west with him on the train. Shaw was in his early 30s, a sometime cowboy, sometime handyman, and sometime rustler. He'd been fired from his last job because the rancher for whom he worked suspected Shaw of stealing 10 head of cattle and selling them for $10 apiece. Pogue, Malcolm still didn't know if that was his first name or last name, was one of the ugliest men Malcolm had ever seen. He'd seen Pogue in action when he shot and killed the man named Gentry. He had since learned that Pogue had done some time in the Colorado prison at Canyon City, the result of a failed bank robbery. The bank robbery failed because Falcon McAllister happened to be in the bank at the time. Pogue killed another prisoner while he was incarcerated, but had beaten the charge because it had been self-defense. Malcolm did not have any idea how many men Pogue had killed, but if he was to succeed in finding and killing Duff McAllister, he would need someone with the ruthlessness of a man like Pogue. The other six men were Liam Pettigrew, Asen Moran, the brothers Carter and Johnny Hill, and two men, McKenna and Garcia, who, like Pogue, had given only the one name. All six men had reason to want to go after Falcon McAllister, and while none of them had the courage to try it alone, they welcomed the opportunity to do it as part of a larger group. Pettigrew, reputed to have killed 9 men, was the most dangerous of the group, and Malcolm had considered not taking him because of that. But on the other hand, he was not that eager to tell Pettigrew that he didn't want him. Asa Moran was the smallest member of the group. Swarthy, with dark brown eyes, black hair, and a beard, He was almost rodent-like. Moran had served 5 years in prison because of Falcon McAllister. Carter and Johnny Hill were brothers who had once ridden with Nance Noonan, but were away when Falcon McAllister went on a killing rampage in revenge for the killing of his father. Their older brother Penn wasn't so lucky and was killed by Falcon. Now they wanted to kill him. Carter rarely spoke, letting his brother do the talking. McKenna and Garcia's reason for going after Falcon McAllister was more business than personal. Martin Mueller, the father of Cleet and Luke Mueller, had put up a reward of $1,000 to anyone who would kill Falcon McAllister to avenge Falcon's killing of his two sons. No one but McKenna and Garcia knew of the reward, and they had no intention of telling anyone else about it. Once Falcon McAllister was killed, they would claim the reward no matter who killed him. And they would throw in the killing of Duff McAllister as a bonus.
Tell me about this man, Duff McAllister, that you were after. Is he anything like Falcon McAllister?
I can't answer that, because I know nothing of Falcon McAllister, Mr. Pettigrew. I will say, though, that even if he were alone, Duff McAllister would present a most formidable adversary. He's killed 5 men that I know of, and he's often bested his opponents, even when placed in the most precarious of circumstances.
So what makes you think he'll be with Falcon McAllister?
Falcon is his cousin, and he came west specifically to be with him.
All right. I don't mind killing this fella Duff for you as long as I get a shot at Falcon.
Do you have any idea where they are?
No, Moran. I'm afraid I don't. I was hoping that I could find someone out here who might help me find him.
McAllister.
Aye, McAllister. That's who we're after, Johnny.
No, I mean McAllister the town. It's named after Falcon McAllister's old man, and there's a whole heap of McAllisters that live there, including Falcon himself. And if this feller Duff is with Falcon, then that's more than likely where we're gonna find him.
Yeah, that's right. I recollect now that there's a town there by that name.
Then that is where we shall go.
We riding or we going by train? Because if we're riding, I ain't got no horse and you don't either.
We'll go by train.
That's fine. The only thing is, the McAllisters ain't likely to be standing right alongside the railroad tracks, which means we're going to have our horses with us when we get there.
All right. Shaw and I will buy a couple of horses. Then we'll ship all of them on the train along with us.
The first place Falcon and Duff went after arriving in Cheyenne was the land office. The land clerk, a very thin man with white hair and glasses, was sitting at a table behind the counter that separated his area from the front.
Yes, sir. Can I help you, gentlemen?
I've come to file a claim on some land.
And you are?
McAllister. Duff McAllister.
Have you picked out the land yet, Mr. McAllister?
I've not. I just arrived on the train.
Well, then, welcome to Wyoming. It's always good to get new people in the territory. What do you say you come back here and we'll take a look at the map and find some property for you?
Falcon and Duff both stepped around the counter, then went up to the wall whereupon was attached a large map. The map was of Laramie County, which stretched from the Colorado border more than halfway up the eastern part of Wyoming.
Now, here is a piece of land you may like, Mr. McAllister. It is quite near the town of Chugwater. The land is situated between the Little Bear and Bear Creeks, starting at the confluence of the two creeks and extending for 3/4 of a mile to the west, bordered on the north by the Bear and on the south by the Little Bear.
Do the creeks have water year-round?
Very good question, Mr. McAllister. And the answer is yes, they do. And the land between the two streams is gently rolling grassland, so it's ideal for farming or ranching. You can homestead 640 acres of federal land and 2,000 acres of Wyoming territorial land. And as it's free range there with no adjacent claims, it means you'll have an additional 10,000 acres of grazing land available to you.
What do I have to do to make this come about?
Just sign these forms, then occupy and improve the land. It is vital that you improve it.
And that means?
Well, you must build and occupy a structure.
I'll be in need of a horse. Have you any suggestions?
Oh, Beeman's Barn sells horses. You might start there.
The clerk took the application form from Duff, examined it, then pulled a pre-printed form from his desk. He signed it with a flourish, then picked up a stamp, inked it, and pressed the stamp onto the form. Then he pulled out a second form and did the same thing.
Now, this is a provisional deed to the 640 federal acres, and this is a provisional deed to the 2,000 acres of Wyoming Territory land.
Provisional?
Well, the land is yours in all respects. Provisional just means that if you abandon the land in the first 5 years, it reverts back to the government. But if you occupy it for that whole time, it is yours without reservation.
Duff took the documents, looked at them, and then smiled at Falcon.
How quickly I've improved my lot from pauper to landowner.
Welcome to America.
I believe I'm going to like my new country.
My name is DePro, Dennis DePro. If you have any questions about your land, feel free to call on me.
Mr. DePro, you have my gratitude, sir.
After leaving the office, the pair went to Beeman's Barn, where Duff purchased a horse and saddle. Afterwards, the pair went to the saloon to celebrate Duff's recent good fortune. The saloon was called the White Horse, a name that resonated in Duff's heart. The bartender was wearing a low-crowned straw hat with a band that read, "Ask us about our bitters."
What can I do for you, gents?
I'll have an ale.
Sorry. We have no ale, but we have a fine locally brewed beer.
Beer it'll be, then.
I'll have a beer as well.
Coming right up.
The bartender grabbed two mugs and held them under the spigot of the beer barrel. He set them down in front of the pair of men.
"'Tis not at all like the White Horse."
"I beg your pardon?"
"This place. It has the same name as the pub I frequented back in Scotland. It was owned by the father of my fiancée, and 'twas there that my Skye worked."
Maybe we shouldn't have come in here. I wouldn't want to be causing you any discomfort from unpleasant memories."
"'Tis only the name that is alike and nothing more. And any memory of Skye is a pleasant one."
That evening, Falcon and Duff each rented a room at the Interocean Hotel, a three-story brick building on Central Avenue. Though still fully dressed, Duff lay in bed, using the bedside lantern to provide enough illumination for him to read in a guidebook he had purchased at the train depot about the area he was going to homestead. Duff put the book down on the bedside table, then walked over to the door.
No, don't ever do that.
Don't ever do what?
Don't ever open the door like that.
Falcon walked into the hotel room.
Always ask through the closed door who it is. Never stand behind the door while you're inquiring and open it only partially until you're satisfied with whoever is on the other side.
That seems a bit much, doesn't it? Am I to check under my bed for goblins as well?
Goblins can't hurt you. Do you have any idea how many people there are out there who want me dead?
I have no idea how many, nor any idea as to why they might want you dead.
I don't know exactly how many either, but there's sure a lot of them.
Even so, by your own admission, it is you that they want dead. You, not me.
I wish that was right, but the truth is, you're in as much danger as I am.
I've made no enemies.
Didn't you say that this sheriff from Scotland sent people to New York to kill you?
Aye.
Do you think he'll give up?
Nay. Though he has no idea where I am.
It's been my experience that when someone hates enough to want to kill, they have ways of finding out where you are. And even with regard to the sheriff, you're in danger for another reason.
What reason would that be?
I hate to say it, but it's because your name is McAllister.
Oh, so if I'm to look over my shoulder for the rest of my life, I'm to blame you?
I'm afraid so.
You didn't knock on my door merely to give me an object lesson, did you, Falcon?
What? Oh, no. It's nearly supper time. I thought you might like to grab a bite.
Grab a bite? What quaint sayings you Americans have.
Oh, 'tis quaint indeed.
Well, pardner, let me just grab my hat, and we'll mosey on down to grab a bite.
I think I'm bringing you along just fine, cousin. Pretty soon, you'll fit right in.
The dining room of the Interocean Hotel was brightly lit with gas lanterns and well decorated with preserved and mounted heads of antelope, deer, elk, mountain sheep, and buffalo. Meat from these creatures was featured on the menu, along with pork and beef. It was a popular eatery, not only for the guests of the hotel, such as Duff and Falcon, but for many of the citizens of the town as well. Tonight, nearly every table was occupied. As was Falcon's habit, he and Duff took a table in the back corner.
You'll have to try the buffalo. It's very good.
Have you ever taken a buffalo?
Taken? Yeah, I've eaten it often.
Oh, I mean, have you hunted the buffalo?
Oh, well, yeah, I have. But the buffalo are getting very scarce now. I fear we've about hunted them out. During the building of the railroad, they hired hunters to provide meat for the workers, and there was almost wholesale slaughter. And that's a shame. They're really magnificent animals.
I should like to see one in the wild.
I imagine you will on your land.
Falcon took in all the other animal heads.
And all these as well.
Duff and Falcon both ordered pot-roasted buffalo with potatoes and onions and corn on the cob. Soon their meals were before them.
This is an ear of corn, isn't it? How does one eat it?
Like this.
Falcon spread butter on the corn and then added salt and pepper. He picked it up and began biting the corn off. Duff imitated Falcon.
Oh, my word. It is quite good.
Like I said, pretty soon you'll fit right in.
It was as disreputable a group of men as had ever stepped down from the train in McAllister. All were rough-looking, and those who were at the depot for one reason or another moved away from them. After the horses were offloaded, Malcolm asked the others to wait for a moment while he went inside to inquire of the station master where they might find Duff McAllister.
Duff McAllister? Mister, this town is full of McAllisters, but I don't recollect any of them by the name of Duff.
A man with a cane overheard the station master and approached the counter.
Certainly you do, Pete. He was the man who used my cane to subdue Striplin when the brigand tried to steal Mrs. Rittenhouse's purse. Don't you remember? It was written up in the paper.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, thanks, Toots. I remember that. I guess I just never heard his first name, though now that I think about it, I believe I did hear that he's a cousin to our McAllisters.
He's a foreigner.
Toots looked more closely at Malcolm.
You are as well, I suspect. You sound just like him.
Aye, we're from the same town in Scotland, Dunoon, in Argyllshire it is.
Well, now I can see why you are trying to find him. It is always good to meet a fellow countryman when one is traveling in a foreign country. I confess that I picked up the habit of carrying a cane when I was in London.
Aye, the English do that. No. About Duff McAllister.
Your friend isn't here.
I thought you said he was.
He was here, yes, but he and Falcon left a few days ago.
Would you be for knowing where they went?
No, wait. I think it was in the newspaper article.
Newspaper article?
Yes. The one about me.
As I recall, Toots, your name's mentioned one time.
And that's all it needs. 100 years from now, someone will read that article and know that I was here to make my mark.
Where can I get a copy of this paper?
Well, I got some copies right back here. They're 5 cents apiece.
Malcolm took a nickel from his pocket and handed it to the station master, who gave him a copy of the paper.
Oh, there. That's the story. You'll find my name, Toots Nelson, is right in there. TOOTSNELSON. Toots Nelson.
Oh, aye. I'll look for it to be sure. Thank you. I shall read it with interest.
Malcolm stepped back outside.
You find out where he is?
I think I'm about to. And I sure as hell know where Toots Nelson is.
Malcolm began reading the newspaper.
Quick action foils purse thief. On Thursday previous, shortly after the arrival of the morning train, George Stripland, a known outlaw, attempted to ply his evil avocation upon the innocent person of Mrs. Emma Rittenhouse. Snatching her reticule, the nefarious Mr. Stripling attempted to effect his getaway by depending upon swiftness of feet to carry him to safety. But to the detriment of Stripling, the benefit of Mrs. Rittenhouse, and the approval of the law-abiding people of McAllister, a visitor from Scotland foiled his escape. Duff McAllister, a cousin of Falcon and the many other McAllisters who reside in our fair town and valley, snatched the polished cane from the hand of Toots Nelson and with unerring accuracy launched the stick in such a way as to cause it to become entangled in the feet of the fleeing thief. Stripling fell to the ground, whereupon Mrs. Rittenhouse's purse was recovered and the brigand taken into custody. This newspaper has learned that Duff McAllister is more than a mere visitor from Scotland and has indeed immigrated to America. He and his cousin Falcon departed the city recently en route to Cheyenne, Wyoming Territory, where Duff McAllister intends to homestead land and begin the life of a rancher. Long an admirer of the McAllisters, from the one whose statue now graces our fair city, and after whom our city is named, to his noble sons, Jamie Ian, Matthew, Morgan, and Falcon, his daughters, Kathleen, Megan, and Jolene, and, of course, Andrew and Rosanna, whose stars shine in a much broader universe, this editor wishes Duff much success.
Back on the train.
Back on the train? What for? We just got the horses saddled. And I've had about enough train riding.
You want McAllister?
Yeah, I wouldn't be here if I didn't.
He's not here. He's in a place called Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Oh, damn. Well, that's a long way from here.
And we best get started.
Right.
Once more, Duff and Falcon rode a train. But this time, their trip would be a short one. It was only 24 miles to Tracy. There, they would leave the train, then go by horse for the 50 miles to Chugwater. Duff opened his book and began reading.
I've seen you reading that book before. What's it about that it holds your interest so?
It is the Williams Pacific Tourist Guide. It's filled with information about the West and all the towns you might visit. I was just reading about Chugwater. Listen to this. Valley of the Chugwater. The Chugwater Valley is about 100 miles long. It has for many years been a favorite locality for wintering stock, not only on account of the excellence of the grass and water, but also from the fact that the climate is mild throughout the winter. Cattle and horses thrive well all winter without hay or shelter. The broad valley is protected from strong cold winds by high walls or bluffs. The soil everywhere is fertile, and wherever the surface can be irrigated, good crops of all kinds of cereals and hardy vegetables can be raised without difficulty. In this valley and near the source of the Chugwater are thousands of tons of iron ore, indicating vast extent and richness which can be made easily accessible whenever desirable to construct a railroad to Montana.
Where'd you get that book?
I bought it at the train depot. It's been a source of invaluable information. What's funny?
The railroads have a vested interest in settling the West as quickly as they can. The more people out here, the more demand for transportation, not only of people, but of goods.
Would you be suggesting that the information is all false?
No, I'm not saying that it's all false. I'm not even saying that it's mostly false. I am saying, though, that they're going to make all of their descriptions sound as inviting as they can.
Is the land good for cattle or not?
Oh yeah, I'm sure it is. And I'm sure that the mountains will make the winters somewhat more bearable by blocking the worst of the north winds. But don't make the mistake of thinking that the winters will be mild because, cousin, it won't be.
At Tracy, Duff and Falcon disembarked and retrieved their baggage and horses. Saddling their horses, they started north, following the map that had been provided by the land office in Cheyenne. The first creek they crossed was identified on the map as Spring Creek. Checking the area around them, they saw a mesa rising in the west. They found the mesa, which, though unnamed, did appear on the map, so they were certain they were on the right course. It was late afternoon when they reached Little Bear Creek. Crossing it, they stood at the junction of Little Bear and Bear Creek. According to the map given him by the land clerk, they were now standing on Duff's land.
What do you say we camp here for the night? We can go into Chugwater tomorrow.
Cousin,
I have never heard more agreeable words.
Reaching around, Duff began massaging the cheeks of his butt.
A little sore, are you?
A little. Well, maybe more than a little.
Back in Scotland, Duff had owned horses and he rode frequently, not only to manage his property, but also when he went into town. But the distances in Scotland were nothing like the huge, open, almost endless plains of the American West. They'd come 30 miles just since leaving Tracy, and Duff had never sat a saddle this long. There had been little conversation during the ride, the silence of the ride interrupted only by the clank of the bit in the horse's teeth, the dry clack of horse's hooves on the rocky ground, and the creaking of the saddle as Duff shifted his weight, trying to find a more comfortable position. Despite the weariness of the ride, Duff had to confess that he had never seen more dramatic or inspiring scenery. To the west lay a long purple range of mountains, which the map identified as the Laramie Range. There were other elevations as well, though many were not specifically identified on the map. They let their horses water, which both animals did eagerly. Afterward, they ground-tethered their horses, and the horses immediately began to crop the grass, eating hungrily.
That's a good sign. If the horses like the grass, cattle will.
Aye, the water and the grass are good here, I think.
Have you named your horse?
I've been thinking about it, and I believe I have come up with a name.
And what's that?
I'm going to call him Sky.
After Sky. Good idea.
Aye, but being as the horse is male, I'll leave off the E at the end of his name. Still, it will remind me of her.
Falcon walked over to Duff's horse and rubbed it behind the ears.
Hello, Sky. How do you like your new name?
A covey of quail flew up in front of him.
Cousin, how do you like your quail? Grilled or cooked in a pan?
I've never eaten the critters, though I've taken my share of grouse.
Well, quail is as good eating as grouse, but they're much smaller. I reckon we're going to have two apiece to make a meal of them.
How do we hunt them?
Easterners use shotguns, but I use a pistol.
A pistol?
You've never hunted grouse with a pistol?
I don't think I have.
It wouldn't matter if you had. Grouse are bigger and easier to hit, so there's no sport in it. Fill your hand, cousin. Let's get us some supper.
Falcon and Dove stood about 20 yards apart, then started walking through the grass. Duff was the first person to flush a quail. On a second shot, he saw a little puff of feathers fly out as the bird tumbled and fell.
Oh, what's wrong there, huh? It took you two shots. That's not...
As Falcon was calling out to Duff, one flew up in front of him. But because he was teasing Duff, his bird got away before it could shoot.
Did I misunderstand the concept here? It was my understanding that we were to shoot the birds, not let them fly away.
All right, you got me on that.
Two more birds flew up in front of Falcon, and he took them both. Even as he was looking back at Duff for affirmation, a second bird flew up in front of Duff.
Supper time!